Welcome to Mango Podcast 10.19. Do you ever open up all your apps on your phone and close them all one by one and you get to the last one and it's really satisfying? Well, now I know how Charles Matthews feels. Hey, Seth, you ever call people a boner?
So my group of friends from when I was 15 is all of a sudden got together and started texting me like in this humongous thread. And yes, the word boner has come up in that thread.
Do you call people boners?
What do you think?
I'm guessing that's a no.
It was a very 1995 word.
And I mean, I don't want to...
I was also 10 in 1995.
I don't want to like dump on a guy too much. But man, Isaiah Washington is a boner.
Will you read his stat line for us?
All right.
Before or after?
12 minutes, one shot, which he misses, one defensive rebound, five turnovers, no other stats in 12 minutes.
He didn't take a three-point attempt this time.
No, I mean, last time he was...
Was it a really long two?
Yeah.
That might make it even better.
Last time he was the KenPom MVP.
Because he hit everything.
He was 10 of 14, and I went back and I looked at like the hoop math box score for this game, and I was like... I was blown away because none of his attempts were at the rim. None of his makes were assisted. And he was like the KenPom MVP because he was 10 of 14 on like long off the dribble jumpers. And like he's
3 of 22 on the season.
He's the most magically awful player I've ever seen. I love him. He's so, so bad.
Is he a point guard?
Yeah, he's got a top 10 assist rate nationally.
That's saying something that you can't start. When you're a point guard.
He's their only point guard.
Yeah, and he's not starting.
He's shooting 27% at the rim this year.
That's pretty low.
At the rim.
Is he like 5'3"?
At the rim.
Muggsy Bogues.
He's not. He's just...
A boner.
He's a boner. And thank God for that boner because, wow, this game was a boner. Can you admit that this game was a boner, Dave? You can't just shake your head silently. It's a very visual podcast. It's not that visual. Dave will not admit that. You admit that this game was a boner.
I'll use whatever word, man.
He's very pliable. You, not so much.
Not much with the pliable. It was, there were a lot of scoring droughts, to say the least.
It was a boner in this game. Of a game. But Michigan pulls it out 59-57 to become 18-1, 7-1, and we all feel much worse about this than I think we probably should because we are not sane people.
So how long did it take you to realize that they were reviewing the shot clock and not the game clock?
Twitter tried to tell me.
Okay.
I was like, I don't...
Why? Everyone around me is screaming bloody murder and not understanding it. And then I was watching probably the second or third time, and I was like, oh, I don't think they're looking at the game clock, looking at the shot clock. And that makes a lot more sense. And then I thought it might not count.
Yeah, he got it off by like... two frames. Like
maybe.
I think it was clear that
Chrysler did a great job of getting it up on the board and freezing on that one frame.
Well, once they knew what they were looking for, the TV people were like, okay, we have a good angle for this. But we also have a good angle for our sponsors. What a terrible segue. Our sponsors are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshire Lending, University of Michigan Alumni Association, The Residence in Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grant, and Lantana Hummus. That was a boner of a segue.
Oh, we're back,
Dave,
to this again, aren't we?
We never left.
No, we didn't leave.
Man, he's really not down with our lingo here. Notice how I've implicated Seth.
He wasn't here in 1995 for it.
He was.
I was probably like three.
He was.
You weren't going to the Green Day concerts with him?
Yeah.
He's a rockin' acne.
Got out of nursery school and just...
But like in an effort to talk about people who were not boners.
All right.
John Teske.
I said Draft Watch. You're definitively no.
Well, he's you know, if this was 1984, hell yeah. But it's kind of a different game now.
Sure. So. But does he miss shots?
Well, he misses some shots, just not in this game.
Not that many, or the previous game.
I feel like
maybe not even the previous game.
I think we've mentioned this before, but I don't think we've really properly marveled at his hands.
Well, see,
he's like the Gronk of college basketball.
You've gone on about how great his footwork is.
Does he have good hands?
He has the hands of Mark Donnell.
Oh, God.
They're soft,
that's
Brian.
Mean. That's mean.
They're soft. They're very
that's
soft.
Mean.
No, I love Mark. Mark, you had wonderful soft hands.
Man.
That's fluffiest.
See, calling someone a boner is funny because it's not like...
but who, calling him Mark Donnell is not, like,
that's
not
no,
cool.
No. All right.
It's way too late for us to be in this conversation.
We have not been drinking. Although we probably should have been. So anyway, John Teske, 15 points on 8 shot equivalents.
7 three, makes.
3 offensive rebounds, 3 blocks, no turnovers, no assists, but, you know, whatever.
They went right for him as soon as Murphy came out. Murphy got a couple of fouls.
Well, he had the one foul early, like Teske did, and then there's like he was like plus 16 in this game or something at one point, and then Michigan's like horrible scoring drought at the end. Kind of dialed that back. But Teske, dominant when he was out there. You know, Jordan Murphy was 5 of 10 from the floor. Eric Curry, 1 of 4 from 3. It's a three-pointer, of course, because of course. And those guys had makes, but I don't think
they made
were
a lot
against
of bad
Teske.
Shots.
Like,
yeah, there was a couple.
There was like a couple.
Those were like tough shots.
But like
that...
the whole tenor of the game changes when Teske is on or off the floor here.
Oh, yeah. Well, the defense was very not good early on when he left the floor. Like when they brought in, I think it was Livers.
It was Livers. And then you've got like these two huge dudes and their enormous offensive rebounding rates just gobbling it up. And
they're just making 4-footers, 5-footers, and
well,
just
and
shooting
if,
over.
If they miss, it's just like we're going to bully you under the basket.
Right.
We're going to go
and
the ball.
But that's their game, right?
That
like they're not
game.
They're not like a shooting team. They're not like a great offensive movement team. They're just we have these really long spiders that are big that grab everything and put it back.
And like, I mean, they have 0.89 points per possession in this game.
Yeah.
And like, I wonder what it was in the 29 minutes that Teske was actually on the floor. Like, they were probably abominable on offense in those 29 minutes. And I got to complain about Autobench because, you know, Teske ends up with 3 fouls in this game. Like, you probably could have had him out there for another 3 or 4 minutes and not kind of got yourself in that early hole.
It's funny that we have, like, the one center who can play 32 minutes a game, averaging something like that. And, like,
yeah,
we're still mad about Autobench.
Well, the one foul Autobench is like, I mean.
Well, it's because it's in the first 2 minutes.
I know
so
it's in the first 2 minutes.
If he, like, trips and hits somebody and now he's got 2 fouls. I mean, Beeline's going to lose his mind, and then they're not going
to... He's at like 3 fouls per 40. So even if he picks up a foul in the first 2 minutes, if you left him in for the whole rest of the game, you would not expect him to foul out.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying that I think I think Beeline gets paranoid about those things.
All right. We have... I have promised myself and all the listeners that my Autobench complaints will be brief.
Brief.
And we have made the Autobench complaint, so now we will move on. Everybody else being horrible?
We saw Johns come on the floor before Davis, which was...
For a minute, yes.
Which was ahead of... Or which was the opposite of what happened in the Wisconsin game, which we'll talk about later.
Right, and you know the...
So what's the... I mean, I'm trying... Do you find any sort of...
Rhyme or reason to
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
No, because this is actually an Austin Davis kind of game, right? Where he's just a burly dude who can
just
go rebound.
Stand there and push each other.
Right, yeah, I mean, like, this was a game that it made sense to put him in, and they put Johns in instead, and it's like, I don't know about that.
He went with the Livers at the 5 lineup a bunch of times in this game, too. I think Beeline wanted to small ball them.
Yeah, but, it didn't work. Like, Livers was 1 of 5 from 3, and he had a couple of decent looks, but they weren't great looks.
At times it felt like he had forgotten that he was out there as a center, that, like, he hasn't been playing that for so long, that it wasn't clicking for him, or he wasn't, like, in the flow of the offense.
I don't know. So, Michigan's taken a lot of bad threes, taking a lot of off the dribble threes, taking a lot of questionable, like, jacks.
Like, just today, or do you mean recently?
Like, I think in the last 6 games or so.
Okay.
Like, there was that period where Jordan Poole was just taking a lot of questionable shots and making them all.
And that's probably bad in a way, because then it right. leads to this.
But, I mean, you kind of have, like, you know, Simpson's 0-4 from 3.
And well, so like, he got hot. What was it? It was the Northwestern game,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And then he hit at least one in the Wisconsin game. And so now it's kind of like, oh, maybe he's become a shooter again, and you know, over four again.
Well, so he's got this set shot, and people are able to come out on him. But in more in general, like Brazdeikis has taken a bunch of off the dribble threes in kind of iffy situations. He gets fouled on a couple of them, but he's also 1 of 7. Poole takes 3 bad shots. Like they're not running offense, and when they're getting switched on, they're just settling for jumpers. And you know, even if you're not going to get all the way to the basket, you're going to get cut off and force rotations. Off those rotations, you get good threes. And too often, Michigan is even running offensive action when they get those switches. It's just like, okay, I guess this is going to be a step back. And you can tell when they're coming. Like, you can tell when yeah. Jordan Poole gets like the, okay, this is going to be a step back. You can tell when Charles
Because he backs up, dribbles a little right. bit, looks like he's going to attack, and then...
And then he doesn't.
Yeah.
And Charles Matthews had a definite, like, this one's going up as an off the dribble three. Those are bad shots. Like,
well, especially for this select group of individuals.
Well, I mean, you know, if there's 8 seconds left on the clock, fine, whatever. Yeah. But like, they're just aborting their offensive system because the same stuff where, you know, you get this kind of weird approach, or they're doing drop coverage on pick and rolls like Wisconsin.
Do you think it's certain matchups that they do it against, or is it just?
I just think that Michigan has this pattern that they want to do. They want to run all this offense, and it's pretty dependent on getting into those pick and rolls and kind of having that advantage, getting downhill, and then either putting up a shot or forcing the defense to rotate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so bad at dealing with switches. And part of that is that they never post.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've got a guard on John Teske, well, you got to throw that down there.
Did that happen a lot today?
I mean, this is more of a Wisconsin.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I didn't remember seeing a ton today.
So, but you know, you just have, you know, Oturu switched on to Simpson, and Simpson's just kind of like, all right, well, I'm going to rise up for a three. Like, that's not.
Can't he back him out and then take him off the dribble? I mean, he did that a couple times late.
You'd think so, especially because he's, you know, able to. He might be able to beat him and draw help.
Brooks
right?
did it to somebody, I think. And Brooks then, had a stutter step and went by.
He
somebody.
Did. He had a really nice kind of. Hesitation move and then got to the bucket.
Yeah.
And, you know, Michigan just isn't trying that. Like, they only had 6 turnovers in this game. They probably had should have had some more because they had 6 turnovers because they weren't attacking the basket. They were settling for jumpers. And, you know, some of those are all right. Like, there were a couple of off-the-dribble threes where it was coming off the screen. So Brazdeikis got fouled, I think, twice on
yeah,
that action.
Did.
And, like, that's something where, you know, you are giving to them something else to think about in the pick and roll. And you're going to have to adapt to that if you're the defense, and then other things will open up, like slips and the like. Those off-the-dribble threes are fine. Those are kind of like Stauskas action. But, like, you know, the whole, like, rise up when you get a switch is, like, I'm getting real frustrated with it. It's
And you think that's probably at the core of their last 2.5 games of poor shooting?
Yeah, because, I mean, even if, let's say, Simpson isn't able to get all the way, you know, Minnesota knows there's a switch on, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to be like, oh, I might need to help out my dude.
Because there's a mismatch. And
right. And yeah. then they come off. And then even if, you know, you don't get the shot, you're kicking it around, you get a good open look for three. Or you can get Brazdeikis downhill. And, you know, I think one of the things that's been pretty bad is that, you know, Michigan is trying to attack static squared up defenders a lot. So, like, Brazdeikis was horrible for 2 solid games here until the second half. And a lot of it was like he was attacking set defenders, and he's not the quickest guy in the world. So he needs that kind of like extra.
Where a guy's rotating over. So he kind of has a half step already.
Right. Like if someone's recovering to you mm-hmm. or he did a couple times where he's able to attack in like semi-transition situations,
mm-hmm.
like that's where he thrives. Like once his kind of like lack of elite foot speed is mitigated and he's got an angle to the bucket, then he's able to finish with both hands. He's able to use the window. He's able to do all the Iggy stuff that we love. But there's just a lot of stagnancy in the offense right now. And it's been something that has been kind of growing as, like, the book kind of gets out on various Michigan players. Like,
well, that happened a little bit last year, right? Where it kind of stagnated, but they rejuvenated.
Right. And, you know, the difference here for Michigan is that they had a really good defense from the drop. And so, you know, when early in the year when things weren't really going well on the offensive end, it didn't really matter because you're still able to hold Northwestern to, like, 60 points.
Right.
So... But they do need to figure some stuff out. And I think they have the pieces to be a more effective offense. But it's clear that, you know, the book is out on Michigan and they need to do some adapting. And I think the number one thing is for Xavier Simpson to go attack guys. on Switches. And
did you think that puts his usage up a little bit where in an uncomfortable range, or
no? I don't think that. You know, I think that's not going to increase Simpson's usage that much. I mean, it might increase his assists, it might increase his turnovers, but I don't necessarily think that action is going to create the shots.
I mean, because he was 3 of 11 tonight, 0 of 4 from 3. So that's still a lot of shots. He had second most shots on the team? Yeah.
Yeah.
He was also trying a few new things under the basket that, you know, he added the float, he had kind of a floater to his.
I mean, he's 3 of 7 from 2. Okay. Like, yeah. That's, you know, that's an acceptable.
He had one Zareem that I remember.
Right. He had the one, he missed one more. And, yeah. Like, it's just like once he starts adding in 0 of 4 from 3, he has 0 assists in this game.
Really? Yeah. That part I missed. Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's telling, because even, like, they didn't have the greatest offensive game against Wisconsin, but he still ended up with, like, 5 or 6 assists.
Yeah.
And so you could tell that he was still moving the ball. He actually had that great dump to Teske, right? And Teske was fouled, I believe, that was not called.
Yeah, the ref.
The guy went right across the wrists on the replay.
Yeah, I don't want.
We don't want to make this about the refs, because it's not as,
because the Wisconsin section is definitely going to be about the refs.
Oh, God. But at least we're warning people ahead of time.
I want, like, so Jordan.
Like, they didn't know it was coming.
Jordan Murphy picked up an offensive foul late in this game.
Yeah.
For his fourth. And I was like, what makes that an offensive foul? And that's literally what he's been doing the whole game.
But that's their offense.
Like, he's like, oh, he lowered the shoulder and it went boom. And the guy got moved and that's a foul. I'm like, dude, he's done that to Livers like 4 times.
So he either has like 7 fouls
or that's
no
not
fouls.
A foul. Like,
yeah.
Like, I just don't. It's really strange to me that Murphy can just bang into a guy and they, you know, try to, like, keep their feet, but they move 2 feet, and that's legal. But, you know, someone breathing on Dimitri Trice is not, but in any case. So it's so inconsistent to me. Like, I feel like if you bang into a guy and they almost fall over, like, that should probably be a foul.
I mean, that's...
Like, I wonder what would have happened if Livers had just decided to flop there. Like...
Michigan did get a charge call lead. Just
I think Iggy
fall.
Took it, right?
Yeah, Iggy fell off.
Yeah, that was a terrible call. Like, he was way late. He was that was terrible. He was
wasn't that
well, the guy was kind
Washington,
of flying.
Your boy
was it?
I don't know. It was probably just 5 turnovers, probably.
Yeah, the guy was kind of flying. He was kind of doing a Superman jump.
Yeah, he was way late, and I saw the replay. I was like, oh God. But, like, I tweeted this. I don't know the last time Michigan's actually taken a help defense charge.
Well, they don't do that anymore. Like, that's not... I mean, now when you come over with your help defense, you're coming to block a shot. And they have guys that can kind of do it. They have bigger guys playing.
Yeah, I think Matthews might have done it once on, like, a slip to the basket.
Maybe.
But, like, this isn't, like, the days of Jordan Morgan or anything.
No, because, Iggy's a big guy. You have Teske, who's going to block a lot of shots. Matthews is an elite athlete who jumps out of everywhere to block shots. Poole's even long. So you have guys that, in those situations, like, why have them standing still with their arms down when they could be affecting or deflecting shots?
I think the only reason is because that behavior is rewarded by referees, as we saw in the Wisconsin game.
Wow.
But that's another segment.
All right, it seems like you're really wanting to get to that. Should we transition to that?
Do we have any more things to get off our chest about this boner of a game?
The flagrant?
It was a pretty clear flagrant.
Yeah.
Like,
unlike the last game.
I just don't know why it took so long. It's like, you should look at the monitor once and be like, yep, that was kind of a swing to that guy's face. It wasn't, like, I think he was just trying to ward him off, but he did smack Poole pretty hard.
Another one, I saw this was interesting. Another one of Teske's buckets was a pick and roll pull up, I wrote down.
Yeah.
So,
they had rotated over, so.
Right. But he stops, like, Westbrook to the basket stops,
yeah, like,
and then
Westbrook.
hits. Oh, because that's what he does. He rolls, he just stops on a dime, rises up, and hits a jumper.
Yeah.
And John Teske, like, is in the roll to the basket, which when John Teske gets rolling, you think, okay, he's going to the rim, he's going to finish. No, he just stops on a dime, rises up, and hits a jumper. Like,
it was clean.
No. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm saying it need to be talked about. We need to,
he's always demonstrated some mid-range game. He hasn't been very efficient with it.
Sure, but not right off a pick and roll after he started to the basket. That's, I mean, we talk about his great feet and his great hands, but that as another dimension.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Pretty all right.
I also want to shout out the MLK band. At halftime, did you listen to them? You weren't there.
I wasn't at the arena.
All right, yeah. Martin Luther King High School brought their band and gave pretty damn good performance.
Wait, it was just a halftime performance, or were they like
yeah.
the band?
Like they were the halftime performance, and then they stuck around and played a little bit. And
they do the step show before the game. for the MLK game, and I'm like, we could do that some more. That was like,
They mistimed it. So, like, you know how the teams come out at like 2:50 or something.
Yeah.
So that is still going on, and the teams come out in their layup lines while. Like,
I mean, I'd rather see more of that because that's like
it was interesting.
Also, 9 minutes into this game, like half Pricer was still slip sliding their way into the building.
True, that's also true.
But anyway, the point I want to get across is that the step guys are part of the culture of the University of Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and I would like to see more of that and less jump rope.
That's true. Yeah, you're not a big jump rope guy.
Well, it's just like, you know, I know
I sat next to you.
It's just a very strange activity for humans to do. The thing where they're like on the ground and then they like butt jump and then the jump rope goes under them. That's a very strange thing to practice.
It I would agree.
Like that's
so they did the thing with the teammates where they all voted something, and I wanted to get you can't say anything because you were at the game, Seth, but who do you think most of the players on the team said is the worst dancer on the team?
Pool.
It was actually Z.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, Poole seems to me like he would be a very confident dancer, and then
he probably is.
And then he would.
He tried to say it was Livers.
Yeah.
Well, Livers not having it.
They have the bromance.
Who was the guy they thought was the best?
Somebody said Poole, and somebody said Austin Davis.
Austin Davis.
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
Proof.
I would need to see this.
You need to see proof. How about the Wisconsin game? Should we
seem to be done.
All right.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan, dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
Speaking of boners.
Sorry.
No, you're not.
I'm a little sorry.
Just a little bit.
I mean, there is a small possibility that you will either quit and or axe murder me.
Which would you prefer?
Well, is it immediately after an Ohio State game?
Well played, sir.
So Michigan suffers its first loss of the year, and of course it's in the Troll Center.
This loss was coming. Like, I mean, they've played some clunkers. They've not shown up. We've said that, you know, they've hit all their shots in the biggest games. I'm not saying they couldn't have won it, but, like, I was upset, but I was also like, yeah, well, this is how it goes.
Also, I was writing the recap, and they always lose when I write the recap.
Well, we should have planned for that ahead of time.
Well, you know,
warned you guys.
Where's Brian?
Like, no,
where's Brian Mack? Brian Mack, where are you?
Anyway, Ignis has 0 points in this game.
He didn't
score for like a game and a half.
And adding insult to injury here, he has 0 points, and they match him up against Hap. Like, Wisconsin's defensive plan is Iggy versus Hap. And if you're Michigan and you see that, you just got to clear it out and let Iggy go one-on-one against this dude.
But we just addressed this in the last segment. This is not – I mean, Michigan just never really does that.
No, they don't
That's
ISO –
That's probably why they did it.
I mean, they don't ISO – guys, anyone, they don't post anyone, even when there's big matchup issues. And this is like, you know, the most important player on Wisconsin, the most important player in the country, being asked to guard, you know, a 6'8" wing forward who can probably get past him. Like, you got to either make him stop doing that or put him on the bench with a foul. And pretty frustrating because, you know, Michigan kind of just doesn't go for it.
Well, Iggy didn't really have any shots. He only had 5 shots.
Right. Like, 5 shots and you got...
Three threes?
Ethan Happ on you.
Yeah. Do you think they weren't good shots that he took? Or did he just miss them?
Like, he got to the bucket a couple times and then couldn't convert. But, you gotta keep going after that.
Yeah.
Especially when you don't have really many other answers. Like, I mean,
Well, Poole had a nice first half.
Poole did. He was
he hit some crazy shots.
I wouldn't call them crazy shots.
They weren't high percentage, we'll say.
I mean, like, he was able to step in and hit some, like, mid-range jumpers that looked confident.
Then if he misses, we're like, what are you doing? But he makes them, so we're kind of like,
no,
all right.
I mean, like,
no?
If you take, like, a 12-foot or 15-foot shot and you go straight up and you're not fading away, that's not like, what are you doing? If Matthews is taking that shot, okay, maybe that's what
you're
doing.
You're over to Team Craig Ross.
No, I'm just like, you know, it depends on the context of the game, right?
Sure.
Like, what else was Michigan getting?
Well,
like,
not makes.
No, and it's like, so if there's no shots out there and you can get a mediocre shot, well, then there you go.
They're getting things from Teske, and this is the game where I complained that they put him on the bench even though he played 30 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, and they did because he gets an early foul and he auto benches in this game.
Yep.
And he finishes with 2 fouls, and it's like, okay, yeah, 30 minutes. How many more minutes can Teske actually play? But this was a 3-point game until that ludicrous, I'm going to ignore this foul on Hap and then call this other foul on Hap thing. So
yeah.
even if, like, he's out on the floor for like 3 extra minutes, like, you think he's an upgrade over Austin Davis for those 3 extra minutes?
So here's the thing about Davis is he actually had a good stretch. That was the first note that I took on this game.
Well, he had a couple of – so Michigan was not finding the big on the roll for the first 5 minutes of this game. And then, you know, I think part of that is Teske's out,
mm-hmm.
and they don't trust Davis as much.
But he comes in.
But he comes in and he gets a couple of buckets rolling to the basket.
So he has 8 minutes. How many fouls?
One.
One!
Which is 4 too few if you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that he was set up well by his teammates, but when he was out there defensively, that was when Wisconsin didn't make a run, but like they're
more efficient.
Well, Hap's 12 of 22 from the floor, which is probably too many attempts from Michigan's perspective, especially. How many free throws did he have?
4.
He had 4.
And they were at the end.
Yeah.
So, like, they've got to, like, if Austin Davis is out there and Hap's about to go up for what looks like a good look, you can't let that happen.
So,
and he did. He would just...
Well, and in contrast, Wisconsin, you know, to open the second half, Michigan was again getting the ball to Teske on rolls, and they were just hacking the hell out of him. So he's... goes to the line 3 times and he hits 1 of 2 both times. Again, this is a 3-point game before the ridiculous happening
yeah.
call.
And I was wondering about, because one other thing I wrote down was, did they just not foul Hap enough? And there is something to be said for that, but like they were blocking his shots and they were playing good defense on him. And Craig talked about, I think even on the round table, where he's like, as long as you funnel him to the lane, you're all right. It's when you let him get to the baseline that he finishes there. And he did. He had a few finishes on the baseline that were really nice. But my thought was, like, he also missed, what, 10 shots in this game? So he got a couple of shots blocked, and he had a bunch of other ones altered. So those times when you're like, foul him, maybe they just played really good defense, too.
I thought when Davis was out there, he also got a lot of his assists. And that was kind of when, like...
He had 7 assists in this game.
Yeah.
Wisconsin only had 14 non-Hap makes. So half of their non-Hap makes were assisted by Hap. I don't know...
I mean, that's Ken Pom Player of the Year right there.
But what I'm saying is, like, Michigan wasn't doubling when Teske was in the game. They were just like, fine, go.
Yep.
Yeah.
And their defense was pretty good.
So the 10 minutes he was off the floor are probably most of those assists. Hmm. And, like, so is – do I want Hap kicking it to an open three-point shooter? Probably not. What I want Hap to do is get hacked and go to the line and see what he can do there.
And that's – I mean, what – Livers had 3 fouls and Davis had 1, so.
Right. So, I mean – but this is talking about Michigan's defense, which was basically fine.
Sure.
Like, if they didn't have that kind of ugly last 30 seconds,
they
or
also couldn't shoot.
I mean, that's kind of the thing that.
But that's something we
is
said
problematic
in the season preview.
They couldn't find shots. Like, they weren't missing good open looks.
I thought they had some.
I mean, everybody's going to have some, but in this game. Like, I didn't. Well,
Wisconsin's good defensively, too.
They are good defensively. But
and don't they run people off the line really well, too?
We're talking about the worst Michigan offensive performance since that South Carolina game three years ago.
Oh, man. I remember that one.
Yeah, everybody does. So
that's unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, they just turn the ball over 16 times. They can't find shots. It's
And turnovers were way worse than they looked because it was such a short possession game. There were a lot of turnovers in that game.
Yeah, I mean...
But a lot of them were really, like, forced. Like, times when they didn't have to. Like, trying to make a pass that would be a spectacular one but isn't necessary. Like Teske only had 1, but it was, like, a really forced down-court pass.
There was that period in the... Like, where they were frustrated offensively, and so they were like, really trying to push it.
Push it. Like, they had, like, three turnovers in that stretch. And they were just kind of like, we have to get out, and then now you just given a possession away.
Yeah.
They also... ran over a lot of Wisconsin players without touching them.
What? Oh, God, yeah. God, what a disgusting program. Like, that Demetric
Thanks,
Trice.
Seth. This is...
Is it, no, but, like, that Demetric Trice thing where, like, you know, they're trying... Like, Matthews is putting his arm out here, but he's not pushing
it's
with it.
He's a visual podcast, right?
Well, where is it now? Can you show me again?
He's using it as kind of like a shield so that somebody can't reach in and steal the ball.
Sure.
And, you know... Davison is trying to, like, make it like it's assaulting him with a club. Like, how much time do you think Wisconsin spends flopping in practice? Like, that's something they practice.
As much time as Michigan State's practiced toughness?
That has just got to be the most disgusting
Davison
thing
does
to watch.
Like, during, like on his way to class.
The
like,
flopping
just, like,
period
jump on the ground
of Wisconsin's
all
practice. Where, I mean, think of how many flops... Wisconsin would have had if Jordan Murphy was contacting them like he was contacting Livers in this game.
Somebody might have gotten arrested.
Didn't Minnesota win in Wisconsin? Like
Wisconsin had 14 points in the first half.
They broke the system.
I mean, it's just a disgusting program. I go back to the Big Ten assistant coach a couple years ago who said they cheat the game.
And that's like the sliding under the jump shot thing, right?
Right, sliding under the jump shot. The Wisconsin, like, more ankles have been twisted playing Wisconsin basketball than anyone else. And that game against Western Kentucky last year, where Davison like has the stupidest little gamesmanship thing, where he goes and like takes a charge on an inbound.
I don't remember this.
It was big news because it was the most disgusting end. It was a tie basketball game. Davidson like runs from out of nowhere, and so they're trying to inbound, and the guy can run the baseline because it was after a bucket. And Davidson like runs and gets run over by the guy who's trying to guard the inbounder. It was appalling. It was disgusting. And Dan Dockich in this game was talking about how like they're not giving Davidson actual charges. That's bull. That is absolute bullshit. Because, like, you can see how he's going into it, and he's leaning backwards, and he's planning to take minimal contact and flop over, like, a little redacted. And if you knock a whole person over with one arm, that's not a foul. They stop the game. They give you a little crown and a shirt with a bicep on it. The other guy gets a bib and some applesauce.
I feel like you just wrote this.
I did. They're a disgusting program. And the thing that really gets me is that every time we go there, they have fouls to give at the end of each half. Mm-hmm. And the refs can't interpret what Wisconsin is doing as a foul fast enough.
Yeah.
So they're intentionally fouling at the end of this half, and the refs let the clock run for like another 2 seconds.
So instead of 4 seconds,
yeah, they got
one and a half.
And it's like they're trying to foul. Their goal is to obviously foul, and your brain can't process it.
Well, probably because they're used to them flopping, and so they're not used to the contact.
Oh,
what is this?
God.
They're trying to initiate contact? What?
I just don't understand, like, from the perspective of a ref, like, if this guy's trying to play me, like,
yeah,
like, I'm putting him on the bench. Like, if I was a ref the first two times that Davidson went down in a game, no matter what reason, like, he could trip, and that's a foul. I'm sorry. That's a blocking foul.
I feel like I would buy a ticket to a game that you were reffing.
Well, Brad Davidson would not be playing.
I'm surprised that flopping isn't just they call it hockey now. Yeah.
Well, they started calling in soccer where like a dive is a yellow card.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like the flop that Davidson had on Matthews should have been a foul. It's not enough to just not call it.
Yeah.
Because you got to put that little guy on the bench. You got to put little guy on the bench.
Well, I mean, refereeing in basketball is hard enough without like the players actively trying to make you wrong.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're a referee, like, you should have that in your toolbox. You should be able to call that guy for a foul.
And then you get to pull down his pants and spank him at half court. Just his pants, not his underwear. It's not.
Okay. Half of this was a good idea.
Which part?
Not the boner.
Spanking? No, these are totally different concepts. Calling someone a boner is not sexual in any way whatsoever.
All right.
If you weren't such a boner, you would know that.
Speaking of boners at the end of the game.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
So I got mad about it. I put it in the recap, and then I didn't explain it what I was, like, mad about. But go ahead. You're going to say the same thing.
Hap's coming down, and he touches the ball, and then Iggy fouls him.
Right.
Like, he throws the ball away, but Iggy comes, and he fouls him in the way of late-game basketball.
Right. While staring at the ref, going, I'm fouling the guy.
Well, the first foul.
He has the ball, and I'm fouling the guy.
The first foul is, like, one of those, like, okay, I grabbed the guy. They don't call it.
Right.
And, like, they fucked up the intentional foul at the end of the first half. They fucked up this intentional foul. Like, what are you supposed to do when the refs can't get the guys intentionally fouling correct? And then, of course, Iggy continues trying to foul the guy because it's like, okay, it does not compute. I already grabbed this guy. I got to do this some more. And they call the intentional, which I get is in the rule book.
It's actually called a flagrant one.
Which is fine. I mean, I understand your motivation for that. But the problem is, Hap touched the ball. Michigan legitimately fouled him in the way of late-game basketball, and they ignored it. To Wisconsin's benefit. Surprise.
I mean, there's a reason that it's called the Troll Center.
It's just
how it
and
is.
That happened to us before. Like, the Hardaway game where they managed to win it in overtime.
Well, I mean, that was
They had an intentional foul that they wouldn't call at the end of that game to Wisconsin's benefit, and it just blows my mind. Blows my mind that this collection of Hoosiers jerkos gets the benefit of the doubt.
And that's why, like, I was frustrated but not upset because I went into this game thinking, you know what? This is how it goes.
Frustrated but not upset.
Like, you're like, I wish that we would have played better, but I was not going into this game thinking they're definitely going to win it or they should win it or whatever. I mean, they didn't play well enough to win it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's clear enough things Michigan did wrong. I mean, 16 turnovers, 5 of 18 from 3, 5 of 11 from the free throw line. You're not going to win a lot of games, especially like a Big Ten road game against a good team. Like,
no, and we've talked about a lot of the things that made Michigan very stagnant offensively.
Yeah, I mean, the refs had their moments, obviously.
Well, it's just that this happens every time. Like, every time Michigan goes to Wisconsin, there's something incredible.
I mean, it happens when football goes to Ohio State, too.
I don't agree with that. Like, there was...
I mean, okay, maybe not this time because it wasn't close enough, but it's happened a number of times in the past.
I don't believe that.
Okay.
We'll get Dr. Sapp in here to give you the history.
There was the one, but I haven't left a lot of Ohio State games thinking, like...
Ugh. I think we weren't alive for, like, some of the most notorious
That's
ones.
Probably true.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, in the 70s, okay, but, like, let's just get Sapp and Craig Ross in a room and say, 70s officiating, what was worse, football or basketball? And then leave. And then see...
We could do that.
Like, come back a week later, and they'll still be talking.
Is there any other takeaways? I thought Livers' run-out dunk was pretty awesome. And he had another one tonight, where on the break, and it looks like he's almost past the rim when he goes up,
yeah,
and kind of comes back. And it's like, I mean, I'm trying to find little things like the that
was rad.
What? Now we've gone from the 70s to the 80s.
He doesn't like any of my lingo.
I would prefer that lingo.
You don't like rad. You don't like boner.
It's not.
We should learn like
style. He won't say it.
We should learn like 1910 slang or something like that.
Oh, I got. Yeah.
That was bingo.
Can you do like 40s bad guy gangster?
How about Cockney? We could do a.
What do you mean like
Cockney?
Like where does a twist like that get off? Slang? Like where does a twist like that get off? Huh? Is that what you want?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, do you have a Tommy gun also over there?
No. Oh. But that's all I can do.
Okay.
All I can do is where does a twist like that get off? Huh? That's it.
So are we
and
done?
I can say governor in an English accent. I can go governor.
Governor. You tried a Boston accent one time.
I'm very bad with accents.
Came out Jamaican.
Yes. I'm good with characters, but bad with accents.
I see.
So we done talking about buildings where Michigan doesn't get any good calls?
Sure.
All right, let's talk about Indiana next week.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page. And so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Hey, this is Seth from MGO Blog. Like many of you by now, when it was time to refinance my house, I talked to Matt Demarest in HomeSure Lending. Since we had bought only a few years earlier, it was amazing how different the experience was between Matt and our bank. He knows his stuff, gives you and your loan his personal attention, and can shop at the different lenders so you're always a priority. We are constantly getting similar feedback from readers who used HomeSure Lending when buying or refinancing a house in Michigan. He knows the mortgage industry well, which becomes a big deal when your loan is as complicated as mine was. If you haven't met him yet, he's tailgating this year with his HemGo bus at the Charity Beer Garden on 327 Hoover. And if you're buying or refinancing, reach out to HomeSure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Welcome, an Ace Anbender of mgoblog.com. How are you doing, Ace?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you guys?
Have you any thoughts about The Last Kingdom on Netflix?
I hear it's
got a soundtrack that's similar to another show.
So we were watching the end of the Northwestern Indiana game, and we kind of got sidetracked. So it's the lady who like yodel sings at the beginning of that is exactly like
I know you're talking.
So it's the exact same song that was the lead into Spartacus, and it's really jarring because they're totally different historical eras, people.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's getting late.
Big Ten basketball. We wanted to touch on a few teams going forward. We're not going to talk about every single team in the conference. One, we have one fewer conference room.
We do.
Because Nebraska has lost their conference room.
Demolishing it as we speak.
You can hear the carnage in the background. And, I mean, I watched big chunks of this game, and it's just...
I can't believe... you told us that this was happening with, like, 6 minutes left in the game, and I turned it on. It was like, this made Michigan's last two basketball games look like the ballet.
Do you like the ballet?
I guess it's pretty. I've not actually ever been to the ballet.
It's pretty.
But I'm using the metaphor anyway.
So, I mean,
describe something beautiful.
You know, Rutgers beat Ohio State at home. They beat Nebraska at home. They gave a little bit of a scare to Michigan State. That was really close at halftime. Like, they're like...
They're a little frisky. And you could kind of see this Nebraska loss coming, too, if you watched their game against Michigan State a few days before. Because even though they hung around in that one at home, they were doing everything they could to gack that one up, and they don't run any offense.
That was really,
which I think is the bigger problem. They don't have an offense.
I mean, it's, you know,
multiple problems.
I think there's a lot of teams in this league that are very good defensively. We just saw Northwestern sludge ball game against Indiana for a win. You know, you've got Rutgers, you've got, you know, Michigan State, you've got Wisconsin. You have a lot of teams that are better. Well, not in Michigan State's case, they aren't better defensively, but you have a lot of teams that are good defensively and very organized. And you have this kind of super group of five teams that just do not allow the opponent to shoot good three-pointers. And there's a lot of kind of ugly games in the league there.
Yeah, it certainly has not been pretty to watch this season. I feel like most of the times when I tune into a game, I'm looking for an excuse to stop watching it. Like Michigan State, Maryland, I bailed out on that one pretty fast once you could see where that one was going, because Maryland, it just was obvious that they were not going to hang.
I mean, they did kind of make a push to get it down to like, I don't know, 12 at some point, but then Michigan State immediately pushed back, and I think we kind of have to confront the fact that after Michigan's blazing start, it's pretty clear that Michigan State is playing the best in the league at this juncture.
Yeah, I'd say for about like the last month or so, it's been Michigan State is kind of clearly just a tiny little cut above. And coming from some, like, I was a little concerned, you know, from the parts of the Maryland game that I did deign to watch. Like Cassius Winston was actually guarding Anthony Cowan, and that's something that, you know, obviously for Michigan State purposes, a big part of Michigan's success has been that they can abuse Cassius Winston on defense, and all of a sudden Michigan State's got the killer defense without Jaren Jackson back there cleaning up after Cassius, and that's a bit of a change from last year.
It is, and it's, I would say, disconcerting the way that Izzo has been able to like patch things together. This is a team that's starting Kenny Goins at the four. They've lost Josh Langford for, what, the last three or four games? You know, they lost Kyle Ahrens for a few games, and it just doesn't seem like much is affecting them.
He's been gone all year. He's been gone all January.
Who?
Langford has.
Josh Langford, in fairness, may not be the worst thing in the world. But
he's picked it up a little bit this year.
He has, but although Aaron Henry's been okay and a decent, like in a like fill-in role where he's not taking too much usage, but he's just been relatively efficient when they need him to do anything, and then that kind of lets Ward and Winston come to the forefront of their offense. And they've also done an impressive job. There was in Zach Lowe's 10 Things article recently, I swear this will tie in at some point, he discussed how the Warriors were kind of getting their offense back on track, even though Draymond Green cannot shoot. And one of the things they have him do is if teams back off of him like they do with Kenny Goins, or say Xavier Simpson, is they immediately run him into some ball screen action with somebody who can shoot off the dribble. In the Warriors' case, it's, you know, Steph Curry, but State has Winston. And so now if you are backing off Goins like a lot of teams have done, they're starting to run him over into a high screen, and then Winston, you can't just let him get into a pick and roll with one defender in the action. He's going to get an open three-pointer off of that. I've been impressed with how Izzo has started using Goins, which after last year, I can't believe those words are coming out of my mouth. But he is Tom Izzo. He's good at this.
Yes, he's good at this when he's not losing his damn mind. The other kind of major story in the league right now is the complete free fall of Indiana. They start out 3-0 in the league. They've lost their last five. They just got clunked by Northwestern. Of course, they only beat Northwestern by two when they went to Welsh Ryan. I mean, when they played them in Assembly Hall, this was at Welsh Ryan. They're now 12-7, 3-5 in the league. Deron Davis didn't play in this game, and their backup point guard, Devontae Green, has been suspended for an indefinite amount of time, which could be pretty bad. Depends. Yeah. I mean, we've had some things happen.
They are 10-1 at home, though.
I mean,
versus 1-6 on the road.
Yeah, they got like a 1-point win against
Louisville. Is that surprising?
Well,
yeah. I mean, they if they don't pick it up here, their resume is not as strong as some of the other Big Ten teams in terms of the non-conference. They have a couple decent wins, but like, you know, you feel like a team like Wisconsin did a lot of work in the non-conference schedule, and that Indiana didn't really. So they could be headed for the bubble.
Yeah, Indiana's only got three Tier A wins right now on KenPom, and with the way that they're headed, they might have trouble picking up that many more. Northwestern was a chance for that. Michigan, you know, us this week on Friday will be a chance for that. But I think they were really hoping that Romeo Langford would have a jump shot, and as it turns out, that's not really the case, and that's bogging things down a lot for them.
Has their point guard returned?
Yes.
And how has he looked since he's been back?
I mean, Finnessy is probably going to be a good player, but freshman point guard, not a super high-rated guy. Close to just a shooter.
His turnover rate is right level with his assist rate.
Yeah.
Kind of a dude, yeah.
I mean, Langford's three-point shooting is pretty much the whole deal, right? Because, like, you can be great inside the line, but, you know, Michigan was able to handle him pretty decently just because, like, they didn't really have to think about the three-point shot. And even sank one against Michigan. But he's hitting, like, 18%, is that correct?
Yeah, he's up to 23.
He's up to 23.
Yeah. But his effective field goal percentage barely scrapes above 50, you know. Like, that's tough when that's your high-usage dude. And, I mean, Juwan Morgan is impressive, but also can only log so many minutes. I mean, that, you know, we've seen at the center position, you can only do so much to kind of carry a team.
And he's 6'7".
Unless you're Ethan Happ.
Well, it's just, so Michigan was able to get him to 25 points on 25 shot attempts. And, like, you're not going to win a whole lot of games when your best two players can't get over a point per possession, right?
Yeah. And while Morgan's been able to kind of feast on the worst teams, his conference only offensive rating barely scrapes above 100. He's really kind of slowed down once the schedule's geared up. So yeah, they really could end up on the bubble. And man, that'd be interesting in terms of just it. I mean, depending on who you follow, like Crimson Corey seems to already be kind of turning on Archie a bit.
I don't like. They kind of feel like Michigan football fans feel to me, where it's just like black pit of negative expectations is always around the bend for them, just because.
Yeah. That's fair.
They're Indiana basketball, and they haven't been to the Sweet 16 since Cody Zeller. I think that's correct. And yep. They haven't been past the Sweet 16 since God knows when. Like, I mean, they're
the team
in.
They got blasted in the title game.
I was
like
about to say 0-2 against was that Maryland? I think.
I mean, they
was Maryland. Yeah, you're right.
They had a couple of those Zeller years where, you know, they were conference champs and they had a couple of good feels, but they haven't really had a whole lot to celebrate lately, and you know, I kind of get why they're
that
posting.
Continued tonight.
I get why they're posting lizards on Twitter. That's what they do. Well, they post lizards, and then they post pictures of Tom Crean, and like I kind of
well, we do that too.
I know, but they do it in a different way. Kind of like, I know my dad was a little bit abusive, but he's better than my stepdad. Not that Tom Crean is abusive, just like, you know, he's not an ideal dad.
I don't
mean that literally. I mean, like,
I don't know where you're going with this, but I'm like allowing you to go there.
I don't think anyone else is going
to
say anything.
For Tom Crean thing is fun this, to follow.
This
certainly would be fun to be an Indiana basketball fan. But
anyway,
I'm trying to save this.
Tom Crean does not beat anybody in on the court, off the court. Tom Crean is gentle as a lamb, and I never said anything otherwise. Okay?
All right.
All right. Save me, Ace.
Everyone adjusts
their pants. I tried to throw you a line earlier, but I don't know what we got anymore.
I don't know. Let's pick a Big Ten team to talk about.
Maryland?
Yeah, let's talk about Maryland.
I think they're going to sink back. I do not trust Mark Turgeon, and maybe this stink of that Michigan State game is just kind of lingering, but I have a tough time trusting Maryland. They play two posts. Cowan is kind of this high usage, not that efficient dude, and I'm not sure how much he's really stepped forward this year.
Yeah, I mean,
I could see them coming back a bit.
The thing that stands out to me whenever I watch them is they've got this Daryl Morsell guy, and man, he takes a lot of shots, and they don't even come anywhere near the basket. Like, anything that's away from the rim, it's just hopeless.
Does he play for Penn State?
No, that'd be Lamar Stevens.
I see.
So, but, like, and he's getting, like...
He sounds like a guy who would play for Penn State.
He's getting, like, 60% of their minutes, and he's got decent usage, and it's just like, this guy's a bricklayer. But, I mean, Fernando's kind of rounding into being a really good player. Like, he's got everything he'd want.
Fernando's really good.
Yeah. It's just like...
But they just don't have that much in terms of shot creation outside of Cowan.
No.
They've got shooters.
And Cowan's shot creation is not always the quality that you want.
Yeah, I mean, they don't really have a second kind of alpha guy. Like, most of Fernando's shots are set up. They're assisted. So, like, last year they had Kevin Huerter, who turns out to be a pretty good player. And so when you only have one guy who can create shots, it's a burden. Like Carson Edwards at Purdue, although Purdue's actually playing pretty well.
I was about to say, they're with all these other teams kind of falling off, Purdue is slowly creep back into what, like fourth place?
Well, Evan Boudreau got hurt, and they brought this freshman off the bench who's just like the most Purdue post. He's like in the Big E realm, where he's just this guy who's not in great shape. But he's
Travion Williams.
Yeah.
6'9", 280 pounds on the roster.
Like, he kind of looks like an offensive lineman.
Sounds like Zion Williamson.
And because Zion Williamson can leap.
Yes, I know that much.
Travion, not a leaper. he was just awful against Nick Ward. He was awful against Hap. Like, he can't defend anything. But like,
is that why he was on the bench for all that time?
Right, but Boudreau can't defend anything either. What Williams brings is like one of those crafty old man below the grim post games where he's just big enough that he can put most guys under the basket and score, and that's really opened up a lot for Purdue, especially Edwards. Like, he's a guy who
has pretty incredible rebounding and block stats too. I mean, those are holding up okay. He just is also remarkably high usage. It's like,
right,
he's a weird player.
He is weird. Like, you don't often see a guy with under 20% of a team's minutes have 30% of the shots when he's on the floor. And he's doing well.
Yeah, that does not happen much.
And he's, like, super efficient.
He's not turning it over.
Right.
Like, yeah.
He's got Teske-level turnover rate. He's got an assist rate. For a freshman big, like, he's kind of changing their season. He's starting over Harms. He's a guy who looks like a real find. And they've been able to incorporate Wheeler a little bit more, kind of degrade Grady Eifert's playing time because he has like 5% usage or something.
Right.
What is his usage at now? It's at 11.
10.9.
It was at 5 when Michigan played them. I had never seen anything like it. I've never seen someone with 5% usage. But now I have.
In his 7 Tier A games, he's at 7.8% of the shots when he's on floor. That's incredible.
So they've had to rely so much on Carson Edwards, and now they've got a couple of guys coming through and developing, and you get to see the efficient Carson Edwards, not the guy who has to shoot literally half the time down the floor, which he did against Michigan. 50% usage, and then Juwan Morgan had like 58% usage. That's insane. It's crazy.
It's really high.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome, Brian.
We've been talking about boners. The middle school version, not like, you know what? Never mind.
I don't listen around
this
in 1995
either. This is the fourth segment you've brought this up in.
It's just that kind of night, Dave. I'm glad that you're tracking. Did you write it down every time I said it so you can cut it out?
Is there a website that like tracks?
It is
like
11:30.
Cool,
if
like,
you think I'm editing this podcast before like Saturday, you're crazy.
We need to talk about one more Big Ten team, and then we can end this segment that I am definitely turning into a train wreck. It's nobody else's fault but mine.
I mean,
let's go Ohio State. Ohio State kind of
another team in a free fall.
Another team in a free fall. You know, they've lost four straight. They've got Purdue.
We even play them again.
At home coming up.
I'd rather talk about Iowa.
Want to talk about Iowa?
They're a lot more fun to talk about than Iowa State right now.
We play them again on the 29th.
We play both those teams.
Yeah. No, I know we play. We play Iowa fairly soon.
We play Ohio State next Tuesday.
That's right, we do. We're coming up.
I mean, I don't really have much to say about
it. It's the game after Indiana. It's an appropriate team to talk about.
Iowa is weird-ass
Luka Garza post-ups and turnovers. I don't know what else to say about Iowa.
I mean, it's just such a – so it's like Fran McCaffrey always has like 65 guys who are 6'8 to 6'9. He never has a point guard. His defense is always terrible. He always has like some guy who can dunk everything, and they have a five who can usually shoot, and then they have some walk-on from the cornfields named Bear or Craner, or I guess Utoff was definitely not a walk-on, but they just have some guy who looks like he walked out of Children of the Corn and can shoot threes.
Sorry, Ace, I guess Brian chose Iowa.
I thought we were choosing Iowa.
You know, I'm actually okay with this because I've got things to say about the intern. Like, they're such an easy scout. Like, I don't know, like, it's Tyler Cook and it's Luka Garza in the post, and then they just surround those dudes with guys who really don't want to venture inside the arc. Every other one of their starters has taken more threes than twos, except Isaiah Moss, and it's close.
I mean, they staple it together into a consistently top 20 offense. It's just they can never, ever D.
It's weird.
Has their zone improved at all?
I mean, so you have to understand that they're 96 in KenPom right now?
Yeah.
They were 240th last year. So they have actually taken a quantum leap forward on defense.
I was about to say, that's
to get to the worst John Beilein defenses of his tenure. That's what they've done. So it's good.
And in conference play, they are barely scratching above Rutgers for worst in the league.
Worst defense?
Yeah.
Rutgers has the worst defense in the Big Ten? That seems
strange.
They do.
Yeah, it does, but then you remember that there's still Rutgers. Yeah.
Check the box.
Conference-only defense, 110.4.
That seems odd to me because they won basketball games. And I was watching those games, and they definitely weren't playing good offense.
It surprised me, too. It surprised me, too, because I did, you know, I have also had the same impression of Rutgers, but they gave up 88 points and 71 possessions to Minnesota and 89 and 67 to Purdue. So there's just been a couple games that have really thrown things out of whack.
KenPom has them at 44th. Illinois is 86.
No, he's talking conference only, so you're looking at the whole season.
I'm looking at the page, man. Who do you think I am?
I think you're the man who looks at pages.
You're using my KenPom login, most likely.
No, I've got my own look.
Man, we were wasting so much money on KenPom logins. Everybody has their own KenPom.
Oh, man, I need to get one.
You don't have one?
No, you can expect one on my next expense report.
Do I still count?
It expires on 3/5. You know, who are we using after that? Mine's done on March.
Don't like talk about cheating KenPom on a podcast we're recording.
Are we editing any of this?
Please. Everything after 11:30 is going to be like...
Don't cheat KenPom. This is not Goonies. Not Goonies.
We're
this
obviously
is not Gremlins.
We're obviously not cheating KenPom because we all have our own KenPom logins.
Do. It's $20 a year, whatever.
We're clearly doing this very inefficiently if we're trying to cheat KenPom.
But, like...
I'm trying to weigh this segment versus our not segment that we just had.
Don't cheat KenPom. Do we have anything else to say about Iowa? No. Okay.
Ohio State?
No, we don't.
All right. Well, Dave's going to kill me, so I think we should stop recording. It was good talking to you, dude.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, no, this was nice to talk hoops.
Yeah.
Now that I actually have a microphone set up, hopefully I can hop on a little bit more often.
Awesome. All right. Well, we will talk to you again in the near future.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah.
See you, Ace.
Bye.
See you, Ace.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get this intro and outro and get out.
No one's editing this tonight, by the way.
That became clear to me
when we brought it up at the meeting in December.
Well, you know, we got it done. It's good.
No, yeah, it's fine.
No, I would much rather. I was going to have to stick around here anyway, so.
Why do you have to stick around here?
I wasn't going to drive home in the middle of an ice storm.
Oh, yeah.
Why?
You have, like, a place to stay in town, right?
Yeah.
Like your brother or something?
Cousin.
His boss's.
Your brother's cousin.
Oh. Your brother's sister's brother's cousin.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus, with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
You're an MGO blog reader, so you've probably already met Gordon Fall. Yes, the guy who comes to all of our events. Yes, he is named after Gordie Howe. Yes, Wayne Gretzky knows this and says hi, Gordie, whenever they cross paths. Seriously. Gordon has stepped up to sponsor this podcast, so we should tell you what he does. Gordon is a licensed agent with New York Life Insurance. He specializes in holistic policies for individuals with long-term goals and short-term financial situations. He would like to expand that roster now in anticipation of opening his own shop next year, and would rather work with fellow lifelong Michigan obsessives. If you're starting out in your career, growing your family, or beginning to think about retirement, you should talk to Gordon about crafting a plan for you. Visit GordonFall.com to start the conversation. That's GordonFall.com.
Steve Lorenz of 247.com for Inside the Crooked Blue Line. How you doing, Steve?
Good, good. You guys?
Slightly better than I was most recently before.
Adrenaline is kind of drained.
Yeah. It was bad, then it was good, then it was bad, then I had to wait like for a few minutes for it to be good again.
Right. But anyway, so 247 has just released their final rankings for the season, and a bunch of Michigan commits were at the All-Star Games. A lot of them did well, and a couple of guys moved up on other sites that 24/7 was already high on. But we just wanted to talk to you about the movement Michigan fans are seeing in their 2019 class.
All right, so like I said, I wanted to lead off. The good news is that Zach Charbonnet is not a five-star.
Yes.
He holds on to his lofty four-star ranking. I think he was about five or six spots from a fifth star, finished at 38th overall. So the the streak or the curse could probably be avoided here. I suspect he'll have a better college career now than he would have if he'd have been ranked 27th or 28th.
There's
so
plenty of evidence in my favor here. I still wanted him outside the top 50, but we'll take 4-star Zach Charbonnet.
38. And then another guy that made another huge leap, a guy that I've been advocating for a while, was Trent Jones. We had him at 197 heading into the All-Star Games. He's moved all the way up to 109th. He is out probably by a long shot Michigan's highest rated. Not by a long, long shot, but by about 70 or 80 spots is Michigan's highest rated offensive lineman signee or commitment. Ahead of Keegan and Rumler. Both Rumler and Keegan fell, but just slightly, like that 8 to 10 spots that you fall just because other guys get bumped up. I think Rumler has pretty much held steady throughout the entire process. Another guy, Chris Hinton, bumped way back up again. I think we had him down to about 107. He's back in the top 50 at number 47. He had an excellent week at the Army game. You know, I know Sam and Josh Newkirk were down there, loved everything that he did. So did our national analysts. So
Hinton's actually a really interesting recruit because he starts off as a 5-star in the cycle, and then he has this kind of drop, and you don't often see the, you know, the bounce back. And is that all because he was playing defensive end, and then at the Army game he was playing tackle?
I personally, my biggest thing is this was really the first time that he had been to he didn't do any of the Nike stuff. He didn't go to the opening. You know, this was really, and that's why I thought his fall was kind of premature, because I thought it was, if they expected more on some of his film or not. I thought his film was fine. The fall just seemed kind of random. I don't know if maybe one of our Georgia guys went out and saw him and wasn't impressed. But this was really the first time you'd gotten to see him live against, you know, some of the better offensive linemen in the country. You know, they put the pads on, all that stuff. He was really good in the game too, but was excellent in practice. So I'm not that, like, I don't know. It's like, this was going to be, I think for him, maybe more than almost anybody, I think it was going to be a week where we were going to learn more about him than anybody else, because a lot of the other guys have been to a lot of those camps. We've seen him in those types of atmospheres, those settings. You know, he had never really been in that. So he comes out and excels, kind of stakes his claim again as a guy. Really, if you're a Michigan fan, you know, rankings, whatever, it's just good to see an interior guy impress, meaning that maybe he's a guy that could see some snaps next year, you know, depending. So definitely trending up.
Did Smith move for you guys at all? I thought
He did.
Yeah.
He was, I think he was next. I was going to talk about, I'm running down the list right now. Yeah, so we moved him up to, so he moved up 70 spots. Himself, he's now 170th in the country. Maybe could have been maybe a little bit more of a bump. I think the first half of the week at Under Armour, he might have been the best defensive lineman there. But 70 spots, I think, is still a huge leap. I suspect, I don't have the actual, I have the only the rankings, I don't have the ratings, but I suspect that's at least a 1 or 2 point rating increase. So they loved him there. Everybody did. It was kind of hard not to. Even me sitting on my computer liked what I saw with what he was doing. Another guy that got not a huge bump, but a noticeable one was Cornelius Johnson, moved up 25 spots to 160th overall. That kind of fits in line. I know Barton Simmons was really high on Cornelius at the opening. Again, fluid, great target. I think he had 2 touchdown catches in the game. I don't, you know, whatever that is. Yeah, I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
But it was also just a force kind of during practice, and really I don't put as much stock into the game actually as I do like practice, because practice, I mean, they're doing all kinds of different stuff. You can learn a lot more about a guy's actual, his entire game. So, the other guy, and this one was kind of random to me, who moved way up was, Carson Barnhart, who we actually had at two. He was Mr. 24/7. He was the 247th ranked player in the country. I feel like we had him there for a really, really long time. He was the very last ranked guy in our rankings. He moved up almost 100 spots and is now 161st in the country. So you could make the argument now that Michigan has around 4 top 150 signees on their offensive line this cycle between Jones, Rumler, Keegan, and Barnhart. so. And then, like I said, I always go back with Zach Carpenter. They beat Clemson head-to-head for him, and they beat Texas A&M and Auburn for Jack Stewart. So, you know, I know we talked, I think the last time we talked about how, you know, the offensive line, there's finally, like, depth there. And this group should kind of solidify that for the foreseeable future. And these are all guys that our analysts seem to be pretty high on.
Well, and it's good for Michigan going forward that they have a lot of risers in this class. So offensive line is a really tough position to scout. And it's really tough to, like, get your claws in guys early and make sure that's the right decision. Of course, the previous six-man class all washed out. But it seems like Ed Warner has a good eye for talent and is kind of displaying that on the trail.
I agree, and I would even go back to last cycle to where our guys at 24/7 were much, much higher on Ryan Hayes and Jalen Mayfield than the composite, and I tend to trust our analysts a little bit more with this stuff than I do the others at this point. I think the track record is starting to kind of speak for itself. I think our guys don't, it's not all film necessarily, it's all, there's the measurables, what the NFL looks for and the combine, like how they test in those types of areas and stuff like that. So you go back to those two guys they took last cycle, add in these six guys, and I think you could argue that, I mean, Michigan has eight offensive linemen that our guys at 24/7 are really high on.
Yeah, and then any significant movement on the defensive side of the ball? I mean, we've talked about a couple of defensive tackles, but I know, you know, Michigan had Anthony Solomon at one of these All-Star games, and I don't think any of their defensive backs made it, though.
No, those guys did not make the final cut for the 24/7. Now, I would say I am not sure, like, how they're going to rank the, because the 24/7 is not the cutoff for the four-star rank.
Right.
There will be other guys that are ranked with four stars. I can't recall. I don't know when exactly they're going to release those final numbers. I don't believe that'll be on Wednesday or whatever
today.
Day it's going to be. Today. I don't know when that's going to be, though, to be honest with you. So,
okay.
I think everyone else probably holds. Okay. I don't know. Quentin Johnson was a guy, maybe. He's the one guy that I would look for as a guy that could sneak in and get that fourth star. Otherwise, I think everyone else probably holds.
All right. Any chance Michigan adds to their class in the late signing period here? There hasn't been a whole lot of talk about prospects they're going after right now, but there might be. There's always a late surprise or two.
It's feeling like the numbers are pretty tight. We thought, well, we didn't think, we knew. They were definitely recruiting some running backs. It feels like that's really cooled off now. Keelan Robinson, the Alabama commitment, was a guy I think they thought they'd get up for an official, but I don't think that's going to happen now. To me, that says that they're probably not taking another, because, I mean, he's a guy I think was better than anybody else they were looking around on. So, and he was interested, too, in taking an official. I mean, not saying he'd have flipped, but he was definitely interested in visiting. So if that's not happening, I tend to be pretty surprised if they took a running back. Obviously, we go back to the interior line defensively, as if maybe they take another guy. I suspect, you know, with Nua just going official, I don't know if it's a deal where they're maybe going to, if he's got a couple guys that he had his eyes on or had scouted that maybe they'd push for. But really, besides there's the grad transfer from Rice, that Abercrombie or whatever his name is.
Like
he's really the only name that I can think of right now that it sounds like they're actively pursuing. And whether that's because they're keeping things closer to the vest than usual or not, I don't know. I mean, there was the Ellie's kid who eventually committed, and then we found out he committed at the Polynesian Bowl, but then found out later he had actually already signed with them, so it really wasn't a commitment. And then there's the Harrison Hunt, Jared Harrison Hunt out of New York was another guy that they had put in a late offer for, and I think we're maybe looking to make a run on during this period, but I don't believe that there's been any contact there. So, yeah, I mean, it looks as if anything that maybe they're going to pursue this grad transfer. If that doesn't work out, I don't know if that means that they look for some guys, or like I said, it could be a deal where Nua may have a guy or two in the wing that maybe he's evaluated, you know, while he was at Arizona State, thinking that maybe we'd take a chance on this guy or not. You know, it's interesting because I definitely came out of the early signing period thinking they were going to take at least maybe two more guys in some capacity. And right now, it's just hard to say if they're going to do that or not. It doesn't really kind of kind of doesn't really feel like they will. But it's hard to say with them. I mean, they have been a last minute program every cycle since I've been doing this. I mean, going back to, you know, McDowell committing to Michigan State and them holding those scouts, deciding in the last second to hold those scholarships instead of pursuing, or not sending Alaric Jackson a letter of intent on signing day in the 16 cycle, you know, as a guy that they literally waited on the last minute. So they are definitely a staff, and with Harbaugh at the helm for sure, they're definitely a staff I think is capable of surprising people at the last second. But there's no indication of that right now from what I see.
So you touched on the fact that Michigan has a couple of new coaches. And so going forward, you know, the thing that they've done is they've really gotten very young. So what have you heard about the three new guys since Ben McDaniels is apparently not going to be the wide receiver coach and Pep is going to continue on as the appendix of the coaching staff, I guess? So what have you heard about Josh Gattis, Anthony Campanile, and of course Sean Nua?
Nua, we don't know a ton about. He'll be seeing Chris Hinton today. He will see Chris Hinton today for an in-home visit. Like, get his first opportunity to meet him. Gattis is a five-star recruiter. I mean, he's been that. He was that at Penn State. You know, just for anybody that had any concern about the fact that everybody recruits at a high level at Alabama, he was an elite recruiter when he was at Penn State, too. So having him is going to be a huge asset for them. It's good to have an offensive recruiter that's very aggressive on the recruiting trail, I guess would be the best way to put it. So I think he's going to be a huge asset for them. And Campanile is kind of the wild card. I was told that he's a guy they think that when given the right stage, you know, this bigger stage than he's at Rutgers or at Boston College, that he can become an elite recruiter. I get the sense, I kind of feel like that these weren't, I mean, because Campanile, his track record already kind of speaks for itself. I mean, with all the defensive backs and the job he's done at Boston College, I think he was a quality hire either way. But I think with the youth, you know, the youth, sort of youth movement with these three hires, I don't think there's any doubt that it's part of the aim is to bring in some more aggressive recruiters. I suspect they saw what guys like Sherrone Moore and Al Washington were able to do on the recruiting trail and thought, you know, I think there needs to be an emphasis on guys. Obviously, you want a guy that can coach. I mean, that's beyond even explanation. It's stupid to think otherwise. But you can find guys that can coach and that can recruit at a high level, or that can recruit aggressively. You know, because being aggressive, being passionate about recruiting is like, it's like 80% of the battle. And so to bring these three guys in, I think it's a net positive overall. This upcoming year's staff compared to last year's staff, strictly recruiting wise, I think will be a net positive for them. Like I said, I think they've gotten three younger guys, aggressive guys, one with an extensive track record on the recruiting trail, and two guys. I know Arizona State tried like crazy to hang on to Nua, as they should have. I think they saw him and you know, because Antonio Pierce has done a really great job recruiting down for Arizona State. I think those two guys were the guys that they were looking at as sort of their ace recruiters. They really tried hard to hang on to him. Obviously, they weren't able to. So, you know, there's obviously a reason why they were doing that. Not to mention, I thought their defensive line was pretty damn good last year. But overall, from a strictly recruiting standpoint, I think it's hard not to look at it actually as a net positive compared to who they lost than what they brought in.
Well, Washington's probably a wash.
Absolutely.
He did some work on the trail. Madison had a good reputation, but was kind of getting up there in years. But, you know, Jim McElwain couldn't recruit people to Florida. He couldn't recruit Floridians to the University of Florida. Good luck, Central Michigan. Thank you, by the way. Go Chips. Fire up Chips. but, yeah, I think Gattis might be a little bit of an upgrade in many, many ways.
I agree fully, 100%. He is. He's a top 20 recruiter cycle, every cycle, just about. So.
All right, quickly, what are we looking at in the 2020 class? About how big? Well, you hate that question.
But like, we'll just say, I suspect it'll be smaller, right? Yeah. I think it's going to look more numbers-wise like 2018 than it will 16, 17, and 19, unless there's a lot of turnover again. Right. But even then, though, that's not something I'm like comfortable enough to predict happening because you don't know. Going to be an interesting class. I mean, I think we say running back is definitely, if they're not taking anybody else, I think running back is a big need, even after you grab Charbonnet in 19, as good as they think he's going to be. I think you need a couple backs in this class, at least. I would say linebacker, I think, is probably a need. And then the other spot, too, and I talked about this a couple weeks ago, and it's I don't know, defensive end. We talked about that 2013 offensive line class. Look at the 2017 defensive line class right now. It has the potential to be an absolutely massive bust. Luigi Villain, you know, if he can stay healthy, then we'll see. And then Donovan Jeter has a chance, right? But besides that, you have Quiddy Pay and nothing. And then that they took, I think, 8 guys in that cycle up front.
Well, yeah, Malone Hatcher bailed. I had an injury and immediately had to retire. Irving Bay bailed after 1 year.
Paya went to the O-line.
Hudson went to the O-line and then bailed in a very strange move. So, yeah, it's been rough. So,
yeah. Go ahead.
Well, and they've taken some defensive ends, but they're like, you know, Welshoff and Upshaw, and those guys are one projects and two projects who might end up on the interior.
Agreed.
So
you could, I mean, so in a way, I mean, as premium as having an elite pass rush, I mean, we see it every year at the end of the year with whoever's winning the national title, who is able to get extensive pressure on the quarterback, how important it is. I guess it would probably make sense to say that I would say that defensive end and running back are probably their top two needs in this cycle. I mean, they need guys that get to the quarterback. And like you said, absolutely, with those guys in 18, it's like Welshoff and Upshaw could turn into really good players, but especially Upshaw is a guy that I don't see him being an outside guy. I think he's going to be an interior guy at some point. And even the guys they brought in 19, you know, I think Ojabo is a guy that's really interesting, but is a guy that's not an instant impact guy. Gabe Newberg, you know, but then we talk about Mozzie, and then Hiddens is going to be shifting inside too. So definitely a situation where, yeah, I mean, it's that 17 class, it's scary in that regard for them, you know, because I think it puts a big emphasis on them trying to get at least a few guys that can get to the passer in this class. So they're in on some guys early. This is the way it always goes. Like early on, it always looks like they don't have a chance with like anybody in the top like 30 or 40. But the one thing with them, they're really good at like getting on guys that blow up as the process goes on. They're one of the best in the country at it. Matter of fact, Notre Dame signed Kyle Hamilton a couple weeks ago. Credit to Michigan and Notre Dame, offered him when he was like he had like an 84 rating on 24/7. We were told immediately that he was like, right. Actually, he was probably their other top target at safety along with Daxon Hill and probably, Louis Cine, who signed with Georgia. He ended the season as, I think we had him at 13th overall in the country, wow. 5-star prospect, you know? And so, and there are numerous guys every cycle, that they offer early, they recruit pretty hard. And, you know, I mean, we just talked about some of the guys that have risen so far already in the rankings. Barnhart won, you know, Ojabo. Yeah, Ojabo was one too, though. I mean, Ojabo was a 3-star when they offered him, right? So, they're very good at, Charbonnet is probably the highest bump of anybody. I mean, he probably leaked about 500 spots from when Michigan offered. And so they're really good at finding guys and finding the right guys, I feel like. So, I mean, I'm trying to think. I say one guy that they really like. They just offered a kid named Xavier Alford, a 3-star safety out of Texas, right? Mm-hmm. I suspect, and I can say that he's a guy that's really high on the board for them. I suspect he's a guy that I think 6-7 months from now will be like probably a top 100, top 150 guy that everyone will want and that, you know, everyone will be after. So they're very good at doing that. So it's going to be an interesting class, though. I mean, they already kind of missed on one of their biggest targets with Miles Hinton committing to Stanford. They're going to keep recruiting him, but I think he's a lot like his brother, where I think he's just going to stick. He wouldn't have committed if he wasn't ready, and I suspect he'll stick with Stanford. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, though. Should be an interesting cycle.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Steve. We'll talk to you soon. You got a deal going yet, or not right now?
I don't think we do right now. Right. No,
well, so. It's well worth $10 a month, let me tell you.
I agree.
All right, Steve Lorenzo.
That's my pitch. Yeah, that's my pitch. I agree.
You're like Craig. You're a terrible salesman, but a good reporter.
Appreciate that, yeah.
All right.
Good to talk to you, Steve. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it as always.
Yep. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm David Nasternak, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher and multiple guest stars. And then I forgot what I was going to say.
Probably boner.
Boner.
Nope.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
I have seen The Last Kingdom.
Well, it's not very good. But you like turn it on and it's like, oh, I guess this is on.
I like the Alfred in that. I think is a good representation of who Alfred was.
There's just like every season it's like, here's the weird Danish guy or girl.
Did he bring them?
Did he bring them?
Yeah, like offer you Danishes?
Danes.
Oh.
From Denmark.
Oh, I thought you meant like the
pastry. Actually, if you look at real history, they cut out like half the Danes. Like, Alfred's life was like, okay, this week we're fighting half Dan. This week we're fighting half Stan.
Are there people that go around just handing out Danishes to people? I need to rewind for a second.
I was just hoping. Yes.
I mean...
This is what ancient England was like.
I don't...
Oh, look.
They were winning the war with France and took their food.
I don't think that would make a very good television show, though.
Just going around handing out Danishes?
Right. Like, hey, here's your Danish.
I wonder what those people on the boats are bringing us.
Danishes.
Where did they come from, though?
Oh, my God. This game is taking forever.